We just brought a new tool out for prep, comp, and review that brings some augmented intelligence capabilities, machine learning capabilities into the process, and will streamline how people can do sort of basic services.
Hey folks, welcome back to Future Proof. I'm your host, Bill Sheridan. Today we are going to talk with Barry Malanson. You all know Barry as the president and CEO of the American Institute of CPAs. He's been with the AICPA since 1995, I think, and is now the longest serving CEO in the AICPA's 129-year history. So that's something. More to the point, he delivers these incredible professional issues updates for his members, telling them everything they need to know about pretty much everything. And that's what we're going to be doing here today. Barry's going to give us kind of a Reader's Digest version of his professional issues updates and give us kind of a lay of the land, telling us what's happening in the profession, how it's impacting us, and what we should be doing about it. And there's a lot going on. So we'll get to all of that in just a couple of minutes. First, here's what caught my eye this week. It's an article from CMS Wire. It's dated July 2nd and written by Erica Morphy. It's titled Setting Expectations on Excel's Edition of AI, which I immediately thought was cool. You know, I mean, maybe I'm late to the party or something, but I wasn't aware that Microsoft was adding AI capabilities to Excel. So these capabilities, they're still in beta, but here's what Erica Morphy writes. She says, Microsoft is adding new AI-powered data types that will allow users to access deeper and more extensive information about a company or place by pulling the information from the Microsoft Knowledge Group. Microsoft says it will recognize in context what is meant by your text and convert it to the right type of data. And it's not just states or countries or companies either. Microsoft says the feature will support things like zip codes and cities, other types of financial data like stocks and index funds. So again, here's Erica Morphy. She says this type of AI it's not the sexy type of robot we've been reading about for a while now, right? But it is an interesting advance from a productivity standpoint. So she quotes Tim Culp, who's director of emerging technology at Mind Over Machines, who says, Microsoft has been embedding AI in all of its Office products for the past year. Everything from using AI to make presentations look better to using AI to help us spell better. These changes are great examples of how AI can get simple stuff like calculations or image resizing out of the way so Office users can focus on using these tools to enhance productivity. And that's the point, right? This is the kind of stuff that isn't going to come and steal your jobs, but it is going to help us get out of our own way by doing the busy work for us and letting us focus on higher value work that will elevate the services that we provide. And I think that's the real promise of AI, right? We're going to be working with these technologies to provide better, higher value services that are going to help walk our clients and customers into the future. This stuff isn't to be feared, in other words, but embraced. That's what I think anyway. And that's what Barry Malanson thinks too. We had a great conversation recently. He had a lot to say about the hard trends of technology and demographics and regulation. We talked about what's happening in those areas and why you should care. Good stuff and well worth paying attention to. Here's Barry Malanson. So Barry, you're at home today, right?
I am.
Forgive me. For the life of me, I can't form an image in my mind of what Barry Malanson looks like at home. So, in my mind, you're always on the road. So,
yeah. Well, I was in meetings and stuff, and I had conference calls that started at 5:45 this morning, and the meeting I was in ended at about 2:15, and I came home, and then I just got off two more conference calls since I've been home. I'm doing this one, and then I got one at 8 o'clock tonight. So,
oh my god! Do you have any idea how many days per year you spend on the road?
It's north of 200. I don't actually like to calculate it. It's gotten worse, I will tell you.
Well, regardless, I'm glad you found some time to hang out with us today, and I'll try to make this quick so you can get back to enjoy some time at home. So, I know you're familiar with the futurist Daniel Burris, and he says that there are three hard trends, in other words, things that we know are going to happen, that will continue to impact our profession going forward. So I'm hoping you can kind of give me a lay of the land with regard to each of those trends, kind of what's happening in the profession that's worth paying attention to. The first one, the obvious one, is technology. So that's advancing at an exponential rate. How is that impacting accounting and finance pros?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with Dan Burris, and I know he does a lot of work with the Maryland Association and has done work for us and spoken, in fact, at the ASCPA Governing Council. So, you know, he's obviously a great thought leader. And, you know, the technology aspect is one that, first, I think it's very important for people in our profession to think about first outside of our profession. So technology is impacting essentially everything that we experience in life, right? How we interact with vendors, what we do in our personal lives. And it's just impossible to not, if you think about it in that way, then to start really extrapolating that into the really significant impacts as to what accounting will be about and what sort of the information flows, even broader than just accounting, will all be about. And clearly, you know, there's a lot of technology models and stuff that show the exponential rate of growth. And we've heard the whole notion of the various laws that people cite as to the exponential capacity. The one I like to talk about is basically in Astro Teller, the CEO of Google X, is sort of the one that came up with this, is that, you know, he basically concludes that technology's exponential growth has exceeded the capacity of a single human brain or a single human to be able to keep up. And that is unlikely to change. In fact, in a lot of my presentations, I talk about the rate of change, primarily driven by technology, will never, ever, ever in the future be as slow as it is today. And so everybody talks about technology being so fast, the rate of change being so fast. But in actuality, it's just going to continue to increase from a speed perspective.
Right.
And so those technologies are pretty significant. So we monitor a lot of the technologies through the Gartner hype cycle and the like. And, you know, not everything that everybody imagines from a technology perspective ultimately gets to being implemented in sort of a common way. So the cloud would have been something we talked about 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. It's basically ubiquitous today, right? Yep. It is a driver of certainly a lot of accounting applications and accounting work. Interestingly, we have a statistic that says firms only, I say only, 63% of firms say that they will be on the cloud or they're on the cloud or be on the cloud by the end of the year. Now, that to me is a very concerning statistic, because how can you be performing accounting services today and not be cloud connected?
Right.
And so it either points to not understanding what I'm doing on the cloud or really not making the type of investment or movement in that way from a firm perspective. So cloud is sort of a good one to look at in that in a 5-year period, it has gone from essentially people debating what the cloud was to being fundamental to how accounting is done. And so those technologies that we will be talking about 2 or 3 years from now in the same way, I would point to robotics, I would point to blockchain, artificial intelligence, just to name a few. Blockchain itself is going to change accounting as we know it. Without getting into a long lecture on what blockchain is, the fact is that blockchain, for the first time in the history of accounting, will allow us to see both sides of a transaction in a public blockchain simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So if we think about auditing in a financial statement environment, in a transaction, we send confirmations, right? Why do we send confirmations? Because we're wanting to see how the other side of the transaction thinks about this transaction. Is it legitimate? Is it correct from a monetary perspective, as well, et cetera? But blockchain allows us to see both sides of the transaction in a transparent way. And as a result, that starts to have to change what we think about as techniques from an auditing perspective. It also will change how we think about accumulation of data. It will change how people, when they operate what's called a private blockchain, like let's say a financial institution, might be able to have access to all of a particular lender, a borrower's records in a blockchain. And they may be able to use that in a way to have a different information set without even actually having to look at a financial statement, potentially. So blockchain has a huge element. Robotics, you know, people tend to think about robotics in sort of the notion of manufacturing processes. You know, we've all seen the picture of, you know, a assembly line with, you know, hundreds of people in it, and then the next picture with hundreds of robots in it and five people overseeing the robots. Well, accounting information and accounting transaction and business information can be done through robotics. It may not be one with the ability to walk, which we call it a bot sitting on our desk, right? But it has the ability to take functions that are transactional, repetitive, so accounting transactions are generally repetitive, and sort of create an environment in which those can be done by a machine, a robot. In fact, one of the big four firms, it's reported, is the largest users of bot technology in the world. I'm not talking about in accounting. I'm talking about in everything, mm-hmm. of every type of industry. They're reportedly the largest user of bot technology. So bots will change, for instance, if you work in a company, what an accounts payable process looks like, what's accounts receivable process look like, bots will be inserted into that and change that process. Now, it may not happen in a small enterprise in the next 6 months, but it is happening in enterprises today. And it will happen from an audit perspective as well. So today, a firm can use bot technology to confirm accounts receivable and minimize human intervention in that process, or the need for human intervention, to maybe 1, 2, or 3 points in that process. Even drones today are being used for inventory observation and do those types of things. That's almost old hat from that standpoint. So each of these technologies individually are changing accounting as we know it, and then collectively will have profound effects from that standpoint. And before we get too nervous about that statement, Bill, I think we have to understand that that's happening in everything we do as well. And so it's only natural. We don't have to fear that. We just have to be adaptive to it. We have to be willing to transform what we are and what we do in order to embrace where the needs will be in society as a result of technology being able to do those transactional activities.
Yeah. So, there's all kinds of, every day you see another article with doomsayers saying, you know, how many jobs are going to get lost over the next 10, 20 years, thanks to automation and robotics and things like that. What I'm hearing from you is that's not necessarily something that we need to fear, as long as we are willing to adapt who we are and what we do.
That's right. So both of those statements are actually right. So McKinsey estimates that 375 million people in the world will have to have new skills in order to be gainfully employed by the year 2030. 375 million people is a lot of people, okay? Yeah. So let's just say they're wrong. Let's just say it's 200 million. It's still a lot of people, yeah, right? And so what I think we sort of have to be confident about is a couple of things. One, what we bring to the table is not our ability as CPAs to do transactional processing, but our ability to do higher order analysis and thinking, and even beyond analysis and thinking, to tell stories in a way that makes impact on decision making, mm-hmm. right? So to the extent that we think of ourselves as being impactful as opposed to transactional, then the value is going to be very important. And I think secondly, we have to recognize that one of the things that we bring to the table that's incredibly unique and valuable is the trust quotient. Mm-hmm. So we live in a world, in a society, that we don't trust many things. We don't trust the internet. We don't trust the media. We don't trust government. We don't trust business. We don't trust religious leaders. We don't trust a lot of things. When I say we, I mean the people of the world. And yet we are the most trusted profession. That's a huge opportunity in a world that's going to have all of these, and as we just talked about, an exponential amount of these moving pieces, if you will, that bringing trust to that environment is very important. So as an example, I just talked about blockchain. Well, there will be many different types of blockchains, including private blockchains that might be run by an enterprise or a company or a bank. And so if you think about it, how will people really trust that environment? I know blockchain holds itself out as this what's called immutable type of process. It can't be changed. All right. And there is truth to that, but people really won't believe that. And so here's a private blockchain. It's going to have a system of controls around it. So therefore, if you think about what we do on assurance on controls, as an example, it is an extension of our attestation skills into a place where society will want to have trust. And that's a great opportunity. We built a new cybersecurity service, an attestation service. It's the same example. The Internet of Things, the Internet of Transactions, people want to be able to trust it. And we all have organizations that have cyber risk as associated with that. Well, I can make the analogy that in the 20s, 1920s, we had people producing financial information and they said, trust me. Well, that didn't work out so well in 1929. And as a result, the audit came about. Well, it's the same thing. Boards and senior management want to know that they're doing the right things in cyber. So a third-party attestation in that space is a very valuable and important process. But that's thinking about our services in a different context and applying our skills in a different context.
Right, right. So I feel like we could talk about technology forever, but let's move on to the next hard trend. Daniel Burris's next hard trend, regulation and legislation. So what's going on either at the state or federal level that you think we ought to be watching at this point?
Well, let's just start with tax. So a little thing called a tax reform.
That's right.
So, clearly, again, I'm going to connect tax and technology, right? So we have a major piece of tax legislation. What are some of their ramifications? Well, there's going to be massive changes at the state level because states are going to react to the federal taxation law. There's going to be a lot of unanswered questions that come about from a lack of guidance that'll come about from the IRS. There are some things, for instance, in the 1986 Act that took 16 years to get answers to in the process. So our profession is going to be dealing with a lot of uncertainty as to what the tax law means. And even simple things is highly uncertain. Like, what does it really mean that you can't deduct entertainment expenses, right? Well, what about if you're talking business 100% in a meal? What about it during tax season if a CPA firm buys pizza for all of their staff working on a Saturday? Those sound simple and you can extrapolate them in many, many ways. We have 5,000 different questions that we're working with the IRS on. And some of these things you would say would be simple, but they are not necessarily simple because of the vagaries and interpretations that well-meaning people can come up with different answers. So we're going to be a profession that because of tax law, we're going to be dealing in sophisticated tax issues in a lot of ways, with a lot of uncertainty. So we're going to test our skills from that standpoint, right? We're going to have to communicate to clients or businesses, et cetera. Now, on the other hand, what the tax law clearly did is it's going to reduce the amount of people who itemize deductions. Now, if you're a small tax practice that doesn't have people with a lot of pass-through entities, but rather people that do sort of the traditional middle-class husband and wife and two kids and a mortgage, there are going to be significant changes to that. We're actually seeing commercial providers like, the Intuits of the world and others changing their business model. We can see them change their business model because the use of their software is going to be different and it's going to be free in most cases. And so there's huge ramifications to that. And then you add into it the state complexity. And then the ramifications, if you have a practice that touches international taxation, there are going to be huge complexities. So on the one hand, tax produces huge opportunity. It will test us to deal with uncertainty in a lot of ways. That's very critical. Now, in the regulatory space, we certainly have in Washington, D.C. today, an administration and a Congress that wants to lessen or maybe they would say rationalize some of the regulation that came out in prior years as it relates to its impact on business. And we're seeing some of those things. So there'll be rule changes, compliance changes that have come about from and are coming about from that standpoint. Sure. At a state level, we still have some open issues. We've had a lot of success with the mobility of the individual licensee. All the states have that law except for Hawaii today. But we still have work to do on firm mobility. It's particularly a small firm issue. We have in some states, we're well over 50% of the states now, they have a modern definition of a test. That's the reserve service of CPAs, but not every state has that yet. So what I was just describing, where we might attest in a blockchain environment to a new service, you know, that fits into a new definition of a test that wouldn't have been in the old laws. And so we've got states that we continue to have to make some progress on that. There are threats to our regulatory structure as it relates to CPAs. There are threats where there are groups in the country who want to pass legislation to eliminate the licensing process of a whole set of things. And you know, you might say, well, yeah, they mean, and you might say, you know, some, you know, a check cashing establishment or, you know, cosmetologists or hairdressers, that what CPAs might say, but they're actually targeting professions as well. And so that is an issue that comes into play. That's sort of a national movement that we've had to play with the state societies some defense on, you know, in a lot of the states that have already faced those particular issues. Yep. I think overall business legislation and regulation is still going to be very paramount. And, it you know, the issues of how what has to be filed and communications and centralization of databases and all of those types of things. You can look at the privacy issues out of the UK as or the EU, I should say, that are, you know, affecting businesses. So if we wear our member in business and industry hat, huge complexity from a compliance perspective. So I think regulation and legislation, Dan is right, Dan Burris is right, that will continue. It's going to probably also increase, and it's going to be, I think, a source of where the profession is going to be turned to as a place to help sort it out for business.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, in a lot of ways, technology regulation are they go hand in hand. They're related. Regulators, just like everyone else, struggling to make sense of a lot of this new stuff. Are you seeing any work being done on, like, for example, new auditing standards related to the use of things like blockchain, AI, robotics, that type of stuff?
Right. So the answer to that question is yes. And so let me make some comments on it. First off, in the case of blockchain, and specifically as it relates to cryptocurrencies that are run on blockchains, I think we will see, and there's a lot of debate, for instance, at the SEC level of what are the regulatory rules associated with that. And actually the people who are in that space, who run businesses in that space, actually want some answers and some regulation to normalize that particular activity. So that's a direct connection of blockchain technology funneling or powering of cryptocurrencies. There's 2,000 or so plus cryptocurrencies today, and we are going to see regulation from that space. Specifically to your question with auditing, we have a major project that we hope to be able to transform auditing. So we have two sets. We actually have three sets of auditing standards in the U.S. We have public company auditing standards set by the PCAOB, and they are dialoguing about what are the ramifications of these things. PCAOB is going through some changes. There's a whole new board in place. And so, you know, it's on their agenda. They talk about it, but it's not like readily moving forward yet, but we do think it will. Private company auditing standards, which also relate to governmental auditing standards very strongly. We have a major project, and it's on the agenda of the auditing standards board. So how do these technologies affect standards, and what do they need how do they need to be changed? And tied to that, we have a major project in which we've looked at some of the things, like I gave you an example a while ago of auditing accounts receivable differently. We have a major project that we're engaging with the 100 largest firms below the big four and saying, don't we need to come together as a profession and transform what we think the audit of the future will be? We call it a dynamic audit solution. And we've created a technology partner, and there are four components to transforming, or if you want to call it disrupting auditing ourselves, as opposed to something out there and a third party disrupting. There's four legs to the stool. And one of them is the standards process. But one is methodology, one is technology, and the fourth one is skills. So if you think about how do we build, create, imagine auditing in the future? And how do we have a mindset that it's going to continue to have to be different in the future? It's those four components. So standards is clearly one of those. Now, our members don't really want standards overload and an exorbitant amount of standards changes. But there are things that have to change in standards that are going to be reflective of how you actually do an audit in the future. Now, that goes through due process and the like, but we can't take forever to do it. And it really is about the age-old study of how do you disrupt yourself, which is companies and enterprises and thoughts are very hard to disrupt yourselves. But we think we need to pull the best minds together, and we need to imagine the audit as it should be, not as it has been. And standards is very much a piece of that.
Yeah, yeah. Final hard trend from Dan Burris: demographics. So, yeah, and again, this is a numbers game, right? 10,000 boomers retiring each day. Millennials, now the most populous generation in the workforce. Generation Z, a wild card kind of at this point. How are these demographic shifts kind of changing the face of our profession?
Well, demographics, and you know, you just sort of said it, technology fits into that as well. So for instance, you know, we definitely have demographic changes where we basically have four generations, maybe five generations in the workforce in many instances today. You know, so we have a large population of members and CPAs in this country that are moving towards retirement. We have a Generation Z entering the workforce that, frankly, they're called digital natives, right? They've only lived in a world in which, for instance, they've known social media. Mm-hmm. And so their expectations of the profession and how adaptive it is in technology is very, very, very high. The expectations of maybe the people approaching retirement might have a bunch of different thought processes in there. So like I just described auditing of the future, there'd be people in the baby boomer generation that would say, absolutely, that needs to be done. And there would be others that would say, let me just get to retirement in this process before it changes. Right? And so, you know, and there's every thought process in between. So the fact of the matter is that from a student enrollment perspective, which is sort of how do you replenish yourself, we've had basically record numbers of enrollments in accounting in the U.S. university systems since basically the mid-2000s, around 2005. Okay. And those numbers have remained pretty flat. They move up and down slightly. But basically, you could say accounting classroom seats are full today. Now, there is a slightly different answer on what people think about becoming professional accountants, taking the CPA exam. And that number has ebbed and flowed as well. And we've done a lot of work. State societies have done a lot of work to increase that. And in fact, members listening to this, you can have a big role in it, because the number one influence of getting an accounting graduate to take the CPA exam is encouragement. We have research that shows that. And so encouraging them, helping them, supporting them, that moves the needle very significantly on people taking the CPA exam. Now, this is tricky because the skill sets of people taking a traditional accounting education study, right? Yep. Those skill sets are not necessarily aligned to how, in fact, if we look at auditing as being the reserve service of CPAs, those skill sets are increasingly going to be more technologically oriented, big data, blockchain, artificial intelligence, those types of things, and a little bit less, maybe pure deep accounting knowledge. And you'd say, wait a minute, how can that be pure deep accounting knowledge? Well, the fact of the matter is that with things like augmented intelligence and artificial intelligence, we're not that far away to having a bot on the desk, which the Generation Zs will love. And you will say, this is my accounting problem. This is my accounting situation. What's the answer? And we're not that far away from that type of process. And right. Under that process, maybe I don't need to understand a multi-hundred page standard in a particular technical area, right? Maybe I need to know how to ask the question and decipher the answer, but I don't necessarily need to know that deep dive. And so that has ramifications to the demographic shift tied to technology has ramifications to training and education and the like. So
different skill set.
Different skill set. There's another one that I'll just share real quick, and that is we believe the shape of CPA firms is going to change, driven partly by demographics and partly by technology. And the traditional shape of a CPA firm or a finance function in a company is a pyramid. And there is a lot of evidence that shows that that structure in the future will likely be fat middle organizations as opposed to broad-based pyramids. And when you have a fat middle organization, it brings into, you talked about what are the ramifications, it brings succession planning to a different degree of complexity inside organizations, retirement planning. It brings getting experience to a different level if you don't have a fat if you don't have a wide bottom pyramid and you have a narrower bottom with a fat middle, where does the experience come from? So there's a lot of different ramifications that come from this change.
So, and while you were, while we're on the subject of young professionals, students, education, it's kind of a different world that they're entering into than it was when we were getting out of college. What kind of advice would you offer a young adult who's considering the profession as a career? What should they, and you alluded to that, those different skill sets that they're going to need going in, what should they be doing now to kind of future proof their careers in this profession going forward?
Well, I would say that entering our profession into the future, you don't want to be thinking about transactional type of activity. That's mm-hmm. going to be machine impacted, technological impacted. But you want to be thinking about the needs that will be in place to, again, tell that story, impactful decision making, impactful information. And obviously, there are a lot of people in our profession that do this today. And so it's a skill set notion of as quickly as I can get to that particular point. So communications, we've always talked about being important. It's going to be even more essential, right? Because if I've got to tell a story about what information that a technological system gives me to make it impactful, I better be able to do that effectively. I think there is going to be a big emphasis on sort of sequential thinking and logic thinking and connecting the dots. Mm-hmm. I think businesses are telling us that that's not rapidly available, that there's a gap there. And so those types of skill sets of thinking sequentially from a business perspective is very important. Obviously, the technology component. So bringing, if you take accounting, some amount of accounting with certain of these big data analytics, artificial intelligence, blockchain type of technologies, you're going to be very valuable in the marketplace from that standpoint. Yeah. So all of those are the way that I would do that. And then as far as if I was making a career choice, so I'm obviously biased to accounting, obviously, for, you know, I've disclosed that I'm biased. I think accounting is absolutely both essential and an incredibly important profession, and one that will be very important going forward. I'd come back to my trust point, and that the profession brings to the table this both skill set and ethical commitment and reputation of trust. And if you look at the world and you think about what the world will continue to need, when you talk about the pace of change and exponential and complexity and all of those things, it seems like trust is going to be at a premium. And so a deep skill in sort of what our profession does combined with those trust ethical components probably means that you're going to have a very, very good future. And the last point I would make is students entering are important, but people at the midpoint of the career is important. And so let's say you're 40, you've got 25 or so years left to work in the profession. So it's just as important for the Maryland Association or the AICPA or a firm or whatever to be focused on that mid-career person. Mm-hmm. And their skill sets, back to my McKinsey quote, their skill sets are going to have to change. And we can't hardly imagine the profession 25 years from now. We certainly can't with any kind of degree of a high degree of probability. Yeah. So skill sets have to change. And what that requires is a mindset that we have to unlearn, because we learn and it creates certain biases that we have in our minds. This is how an audit's done. This is how tax, this is what it means for tax. This is, we build biases. That's just the nature of humankind. And so if we really want to, and they're not necessarily bad biases, they're experiential biases. But if we really want to get reskilled to match where expectations of the profession are likely to be going, we have to be willing to unlearn, to let go certain of those things that we believe to be the only way or the appropriate way, because there are going to be different ways in many of the services that we do.
Yep. Are we, and by we, I'm talking about the profession as a whole, are we moving fast enough, do you think? I mean, are you feeling any urgency about taking bigger, faster leaps into the future at this point?
Well, we're pushing pretty hard. I mean, I've talked about the auditing of the future project. I mean, we're doing a whole lot of work of leading the notion in blockchain. And for instance, we've adopted this process in blockchain where we have basically free webcast a couple times a month to try to educate the profession on blockchain. Then there's deeper dive if you want to get a certificate in those areas. you know, but the ramifications of blockchain on tax and auditing and all of those things, we've got work streams associated with that. We're expecting reports out this year. We just brought a new tool out for prep, comp, and review that brings some augmented intelligence capabilities, machine learning capabilities into the process. Yep. And we'll streamline how people can do sort of basic services, prep, comp, and review, and help them for higher quality and more efficiency. We're looking at a new, as I mentioned before, new methodology, technology, standards, and competencies related to audit. And so the answer to the question is, no one is moving fast enough. Frankly, no profession, no industry, no company, really, you know, I would say probably if you brought, you know, the Googles of the world and all of those types of just top-notch technology companies, right, they would probably, if they were honest, would say, yeah, we aren't even moving fast enough. And so certainly, I would never say, yeah, we're moving fast enough. There is a limit to how fast you can move, and there's change management in this. The issue we have, unlike, let's say, a big firm saying or a big company saying we're going to move from going left to go right. Well, boards and CEOs, whatever, make those decisions, and basically everybody goes that way because they're employees of the company.
Yep.
Well, people are part of a profession. In our profession, there's regulatory components, state and federal regulatory components. There's, in, you know, 44,000 firms. We have members all over the world. They work for 150,000 different employers. And so ours is the notion of creating tools and leadership, persuasion to move. And that's a little bit more time consuming than just someone in a big company saying, we're moving from left to right.
Sure, sure. What does this profession look like to you 10 or 20 years down the road? And I know it's hard to, especially given the exponential rate of some of these changes that we've been talking about, but as you look forward, what is this profession going to look like to you in the near future?
Well, Bill, you probably heard me say this, so it would be unfair of me to even try to answer this question without first saying this statement. What oftentimes when I speak, I say to people, we won't recognize the profession in 10 years. And then I say, just to be honest, what I really mean is 5 years. But if I said 5 years to start with, you wouldn't actually be interested in hearing what I have to say. The fact is that if we could go back in time 20 years, since your question was 10 to 20 years, and if we could honestly go back without the benefit of what we know today and think about the profession 20 years ago, we wouldn't, 20 years ago, we wouldn't recognize the profession of today.
Yeah,
and so it's going to be, the delta is going to be bigger and quicker than 20 years ago to today. But we've always, the profession has changed pretty dramatically. Certainly in the microcomputer age forward, it's changed pretty dramatically. Yeah. And so what are some of the things that we would expect? Well, I mentioned one. I think the shape of firms will be different. The shapes of finance functions will be different. Certainly auditing is going to be significantly different. There's going to be a lot more attestation around systems and controls because technology is going to bring those services to companies. Tax is going to be dramatically different. Simple tax returns are going to probably not exist. However, you want to put quotes around simple tax return. But clearly, I mean, we would certainly, I would think in 20 years, you would have a situation where a significant number of the American public, taxpaying public, would not physically file a tax return, right? Information flow should allow for that to be done seamlessly, which will have a ramification to what you look like from a tax structure perspective. Now, people who are entrepreneurs, which is a lot of what the clients of CPA firms are, will probably have differences because corporate or entity, let's call it taxation, is probably going to be still with us just because of the multinational, multi-jurisdictional aspects of that. I think we're going to get experience differently. So how do we get experience in the profession today? We sort of live it, right? We go to work for a firm, we go to work for a company, and we experience things, right?
Yep.
Well, maybe we're going to have more simulations into that process. Maybe we're going to gain experience like a pilot does before he or she flies a plane, and that is, you know, through simulation.
Interesting.
We're going to have bots on our desk. We're going to have the deep technical information is going to be supported to us in a very different technological way. We're probably going to have some next generation of blockchain, right? You know, even though people say blockchain is going to be revolutionary, there'll be some next generation of blockchain that's going to supersede blockchain, right? And I think what we don't talk about enough is we're going to see a world in which employment is much different in 20 years. And therefore, that's going to look different in our profession as well. So if you believe the McKinsey statistic, or even partially believe the McKinsey statistic, you know, where jobs go is going to be interesting. It's going to have implications to business and what work looks like and how we define work. And so I'll leave this question with this point. It has been reported and it is said that the thing that people of the world do most for a living, so let's call it a job or a function, that they most do to make a living is to drive something. If you take all the people of the world and you look at what they do to earn a living, they drive something. Okay, I've heard this statistic, I don't know if it's accurate, that 10% of the American public earns their living driving something. That's a technology that we know is going to change, right? So mm-hmm. people drive equipment and tractors and cars and for a living, delivery vehicles, et cetera. So we know delivery is going to change with drones, et cetera. People, the manufacturers of tractors, so they don't even put steering wheels on their tractors. Obviously, we know autonomous vehicles are in various stages of development. It is not, there is no uncertainty about autonomous vehicles, right? Yet, the more people make a living on that than anything else. And so if you just think about that as to that change's impact to society, it's pretty dramatic. We know it's going to happen, and it's a pretty dramatic change. And so I think where the true answer about our profession changing will be in the context of significant societal change, significant ways of difference of how we live and what a different generation has as an expectation of work and what they do and what a business, what a corporation, what major corporations think about as their primary objective. You know, mm-hmm. as their primary objective, we might define it today, is to maximize rates of return and profitability. Will that be the case in the future? Because of the sort of the combination of business models and technology and implications to people and work, they may have to think about that differently. Because if no one is working, who's buying the products and services that are produced, right? And so I think we're going to see in 20 years pretty significant shifts. I think it's fantastically exciting. No one can predict it with certainty, but our profession will shift in that context is the way I would say it.
That's going to be fascinating to watch. We should get together in another year or two and have this conversation again and see how far things have gone. But in the meantime, Barry, thanks for the time. Thanks for the insights. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you, Bill.
That was Barry Melanson, President and CEO of the American Institute of CPAs. You can find out more by visiting AICPA.org or AICPA-CIMA.com. And you'll be hearing more about future trends and technological advances worth paying attention to at the Maryland Association of CPAs 2018 CPA Summit. It's scheduled for December 6th in Towson, Maryland. Details are available at macpa.org/summit. Also, CPA.com, which is the technology arm of the AICPA, puts on a fantastic event every year. It's called Digital CPA. It's a great look at trends that are changing the face of the profession. This year's Digital CPA Conference will be held December 3rd through 5th at the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center in National Harbor, Maryland. You can find details at cpa.com/digital-cpa.